conference.
Maddie Ginsburg for House Bill 2.
Please come to order. This afternoon, we left off last night with House Bill number 156, the motor fuel tax. Then we'll go to 196, the air carrier statute change that was held for Representative Davis, who has looked at it and he's ready to. And also HCR 19, House Bill 177, House Bill 220, and House Bill 75, the budget bill. Okay. Representative Pouchot, did you have anything else on the motor fuel tax?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we were in the middle of debate on one of two amendments. We have the so-called Navarre Amendment dealing with setting up some a separate category of money for cleanup of hazardous waste, primarily oriented to benzene and other gasoline or oil, fuel oil spills, and then the so-called Pouchot Amendment, which set up the same system exactly for air quality in non-attainment areas. And let's see. I'm not sure the Navarre amendment had been moved yet. It was just being discussed.
Okay. I don't think any amendments were moved.
Representative Wallace.
Would Representative Pouchot please tell us the difference between Representative Navarre and your amendment? They sound the same, but.
Both of them set up a 1% fund from which we would appropriate monies each year. It's not a dedicated fund. One would be for hazardous spill cleanup.
Oh.
The second would be for air quality cleanup for carbon monoxide dealing, obviously coming from auto emissions.
Representative Brown?
When it says 1% of the revenue deposited under this subsection, is that 1% before or after the rebates? Or let me ask it another way. How much money does 1% amount to?
26 plus 33, $590,000.
So if we adopted both of them, we'd be setting aside $1 million out of the total stream, more than $1 million?
Right, but we would have to appropriate those each year. It's like the oil spill mitigation account. It's set up, but we would have to move them like in the front section of the budget, move a dollar or all of it, or any combination, into these programs. Or not even in the front section, we just have to appropriate it somewhere.
Representative Sweckhammer.
All right, my question is kind of in line with Kay's. You're talking about 1% of the total.
Pardon me? I'm sorry.
You're talking about 1% of the total monies, not 1% of the 8%, leaving 7%, right?
Right.
You're talking about 1% of the total monies.
Right. Is there further discussion on this? This amendment has not been moved.
So that's, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, so that's $530,000 the first year then, if we got $53 million net, or?
It would be for, Mr. Chairman, be all of the program. We currently collect about $26 million. We would then collect $53,590, so it'd be $590,000 that could be appropriated
okay.
for these.
That's
things.
Yes, Representative Larson.
Well, seeing we have two provisions before us, and seeing that we don't know the exact amount of money that's necessary, do we have an opportunity to move towards the middle with a 0.5%? 1%?
Mr. Chairman, a couple answers to that. One is that we already know, for example, in the oils, in the hazardous and toxic substance cleanup, that we probably have over $1 million worth of need every year. And this year, the governor has appropriated in the capital budget $250,000 to help supplement it. We're putting the mitigation account turnover of $330,000 in the front section of the budget. That still won't meet the need of the Nome playground and the stuff on the Kenai and the benzene spills and the Chugiak Eagle River situation. So clearly there's more than enough need, but the choice as to how much, say a 0.5% or percent, That choice can really be made every year in the budget. We can say, okay, we've accumulated $590,000 this last year, but just like the governor chose $250,000, we could say, and we will choose to appropriate $250,000 or the equivalent of 0.5%. So we would always have that choice. Relative to air quality, there are some very real projects that could be done above and beyond the IEM inspection to try to meet the clean air standards in our non-attainment areas for carbon monoxide, Anchorage and Fairbanks, obviously. There's citywide monitoring, traffic flow, monitoring and regulation, signalization work that could directly alleviate. And those activities, we've got some costs, but between Anchorage and Fairbanks alone, they well exceed $590,000. But even if we wanted to, then we could appropriate less.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Swackhammer.
If the chair would so like, I will move the Navarre amendment this time.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, the Navarre amendment has amendment number one has been adopted. Is there further amendments?
I'm not
going to
be able to move my amendment. I'd sure appreciate if somebody could move my amendment.
I'll move your amendment.
The air quality amendment, then, that appears in the packet has been moved. Is there any discussion on that? Is there any objection to that amendment? If not, that amendment has been adopted. Is there any further debate on the tax, the motor fuel tax bill itself? If not, what's the desire of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, is that moving it at this time with the letter of intent, or is it just to move the bill without the letter of intent?
If I might, the letter of intent, I think, is pretty important to the bill because it tells the department where we expect the money to be put back into the budget, primarily for maintenance and operation of our highways and ferry system.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, maybe we could get a response from the commissioner. One thing that I feel kind of uncomfortable about oftentimes is that as we try to ask the departments to do certain things, that we're telling them that they got to do it, not necessarily within their best judgment as to where the most needs are, but as we have politically arrived at a solution to get the necessary votes, you might say. And I guess the way I feel is that I do have faith in the departments and so forth being able to make judgments. And without sounding too political, I'm still skeptical of spending 26 or 27% in relation to the ferry system. That may need 50%. But to me, I guess that should be a decision of the department to put that money where it's going to do the most good, to serve the most people. And I don't know if the letter of intent carries out that policy.
Why don't we have Commissioner Hickey, if you could come up and specifically address the question of the correlation between the letter of intent that the subcommittee drafted versus the department's druthers or plans for allocation of the $20 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Larson, the letter of intent is, with a couple of minor exceptions, entirely consistent with the recommendations we've made in the fiscal note in terms of where to allocate the money, both in terms of highway aviation maintenance, predominantly road maintenance by region, district, and region, as well as the allocation, the level of the allocation, and the split in terms of marine highway money between Southeast and Southwest operations. We were given a very reasonable opportunity in the subcommittee to make suggestions about additions to the language to track what we intend to do with the money and what we intend to do with the road review task force, and those suggestions were essentially adopted. The two differences on the bottom of the first page, the additional $500,000 for Marine Highway is not a recommendation we had made. If I understand it, that money is being provided to essentially equal out the level of money both to road maintenance and to the Marine Highway in operations relative to the 86 level of expenditure. Both now are about 85% level. Without that $500,000, Marine Highways wasn't quite at that point. And I don't have a position for the administration about whether that is an acceptable increment. We are below what we have this year for operations. We are looking at service cuts, and we're committed to trying to do what we can not to have to take those cuts, but we're also committed to bringing the cost of the system down. So that's one difference. The second difference, very minor, it was our recommendation to spend $100,000 on the Road Responsibility Task Force, and the Marine Highway component is something that we had dealt with as a fiscal note to that piece of legislation, which I believe is still in the Senate from Senator Duncan. This works for us, although we think we may be able to fund the Marine Highway group through the current budget with Marine Highways, and had asked for the authority to spend up to $100,000 in that task force review if, in fact, we were able to pay for the advisory group through other funds. That's about the only difference, and beyond that, I'm not troubled by what is here. I do agree that, if all possible, the department should be allowed to function, but this is language which we had a chance to comment on and have no trouble with.
Just a comment and one additional question, Mr. Chairman. Of course, with the letter of intent and going back to the level of funding of 86, we're assuming then that the way in which the money was being appropriated for the various services in 86 were correct. In some ways, in my opinion, that limits the new administration, the new commissioner, flexibility to exercise his best judgment. But if you're satisfied with that, so am I. My next question is what is the time frame for this letter of intent? Because the 8% motor fuel tax is going to last for more than 1 year. Is this letter of intent then just for the coming year, or is it for all future years?
Representative Larson, if I might pull a little quote here, that was exactly one of our concerns. And so the letter of intent says these additional monies are not to be considered one-time add-ons to the DOT budget, but are to be made available for maintenance operation and the Marine Highway system in all future years. And, of course, we don't have control, obviously, in what the governor submits, but I think certainly the department and certainly the subcommittee at this time, it was fully the feeling of all of us, I think, that this represented $20 million of ongoing new money that we would be utilizing to put back into the budget. Now, next year, the relationship won't be tied so closely, but next year we would fully expect the department would come back with at least $140 million budget as opposed to $120 million budget for DOT, because we've taken significant revenue and enhancement measures.
And it does allow them the flexibility to be able to analyze their budget and put the additional monies where they feel it would do the most good for the most people.
Chairman, if I could make a brief follow-up comment. That is a concern that I have had, that we don't have as much flexibility as perhaps we ought to manage. I'm relatively comfortable in terms of talking to our maintenance and operation directors and reviewing the programs that were undertaken in FY86, that what we have here is it's a workable proposal. It's better than what we've dealt with this year. I am concerned that there may be some problems in between one region versus the other as to whether the money is where it ought to be, whether you're rewarding over expenditures from that time period by adding back that level. In 6 weeks, I don't have the frame of reference I'd like to have to be able to assess that. I'm comfortable with it for this year. I would envision coming back next year with probably a different type of proposal. And the questions of equity between highway, road, marine highway, good management and cost savings versus inefficiency and rewarding that, those are all concerns I have, and I want to see, and I'm committed to having the budget next year reflect a better review of that kind of question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was curious whether or not it was the intent of the sponsors of both of these amendments to add language in the front part of the budget to make these appropriations this year, in as much as dollars will be accruing to the special highway fuel tax account on the effective date of this bill. And you, it seems that if your intent is to get money into this account to be doing some of this work on air quality and water quality, that you would put money into the, or put the language into the front part of the budget, much as you've done with the mitigation account now.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd have to honestly say that hadn't occurred to me, but upon you bringing it up and thinking about it, I would argue that that it's not necessary that we do that this year. Indeed, there would be monies that in 88 could conceivably be spent, but we haven't accrued them yet. We don't know quite what they are, and I guess I would feel better. We do have monies in the budget now, for example, through two mechanisms that I mentioned earlier, for the cleanup, the spill cleanup. The air quality, I hate to say this, I think the need's always going to be out there, and I would feel more comfortable, I think, seeing the balance of the money and then making the decision on what to appropriate. Because presumably you wouldn't necessarily appropriate the balance of whatever it may be. You'd want to pick a dollar amount, is my guess. You'd want to say $500,000, or you'd want to look at the list from Anchorage and Fairbanks and see what the need was, what they were going to do with it, and then appropriate a dollar amount rather than the balance of the appropriation.
So the effect of both of the amendments is not to put any new dollars into either of those, new dollars above and beyond what's already in FY 88
or 88.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. I'm looking at the fiscal note dated 4/27, prepared by the chair, and I'm really having difficulty understanding this in terms of, it shows at the top that we're going to spend $20,500,000 on expenditures, which I don't really see how the bill itself makes any expenditures. And then under revenue, it looks like only $2.475 million under revenue. So I'm just trying to figure this out here, because it seems like we should be showing the net revenue generated by the proposal as opposed to what's going to be spent somewhere else, because that's not actually spent by this vehicle.
Representative Pushaw.
Mr. Chairman, I sympathize. I had the same question here just 2 days ago in trying to figure this out. There are two fiscal notes. One is from the Department of Revenue. That's the $33 million fiscal note. This fiscal note is only from DOT. The revenue line that you see there, the 2475, is additional ferry system revenues that accrue the system when you bill back $5 million point 500,000. You put on more ships, or you keep ships in the water more, they earn revenue. So that revenue comes back from the increase in the ferry system. The $20,000 is the total amount spread back through the objects, personal services, travel, in the DOT budget, as that would apply to all the management and operations associated with the highway maintenance and operation and the ferry system operation.
Is that normally how we do fiscal notes? I thought the fiscal note actually cataloged what was the result of the passage of the bill. It seems like here that's, you know, there isn't that direct connection there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is exactly the point. We wanted the direct connection between the raising of these revenues and where they would go in DOT. That we didn't want just $33 million just going into the general fund. We've shorted the DOT budget, in our budget, $20 million, and we wanted to make it perfectly clear where that $20 million was going, and it's going back into the DOT by and large. Some money still returns into the general fund.
Mark, you
respond. If I could just add a brief comment. That was also our intent, Representative Brown, and in fact we made the initial proposal to do it as a fiscal note, even though it's not a direct fiscal impact to our department of the passage of the legislation. Our point was to get this money back for road maintenance and ferry system would require the passage of the fuel tax. And it is my understanding that this sort of mechanism has been used prior years in the same vein, that the fiscal note approach has been used to tie a revenue generation measure to making additional appropriations for a purpose.
So which fiscal, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, which fiscal note is it that shows the increase from the tax? I'm still not finding it.
You've got three fiscal notes. You've got the one from Department of Revenue, which shows 33.5, their incoming revenue. You've got another one from Department of Transportation, the expenditure there. Then you've got Then the other one that you have also for the audit is 7,500, which also should be in your packet.
33?
Mr. Chairman, our fiscal note is taken, has been replaced by the one dated 4/27 prepared by the chairman. We had put one in originally and had been amended by the committee. So you won't, I don't know that you'll find our fiscal note in the package anymore.
Representative Brown, have you located those?
Okay, is the is it dated 3/2? That's not the one. The one that says agency effective revenue with 33,000, that's not the one that shows the... I was just looking for the one where it showed the increase, and I think I found it. If it's dated 3/2, is that
with
it?
With 33.
That's correct. 3/2.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Further questions?
I have one question.
Yes.
I'm still a little unclear of the language in this letter of intent here where, I think you clarified it, but it says here, these additional monies are not to be considered one-time add-ons to the DOT's budget, but are made available for maintenance and operations and the marine highway system in all future years. Now, I guess my question that I have on this has to do with there was discussion by Representative Larson that this appropriation is not a appropriation to necessarily the ferry system, or that this portion, which is forget what the total amount is. I guess it'd be 5.5 million. So the question I have is: are we appropriating this money? And does this language then? It seems that it does to me. Is somehow an endorsement for this formula that we put in the budget this year. Now, am I wrong in saying that there's some justification that that's the kind of a formula that we want in the future, or are you saying that this language doesn't say that? I mean, that's what I get out of this letter of intent.
Mr. Chairman, this is an endorsement for the addition of the money. That's first, the money, the $20 million. For this year, we are endorsing the money going back into the budget in the way that was laid out in the fiscal note and also in the letter of intent for by region and by ferry system. But it's fully anticipated that each year when the department comes in, they will shift around those monies. And I don't mean just between the ferry system and the road system, but between the Western District and the Interior District and South Central District, there's going to be shifting around because I think, as the Commissioner stated, that 86 was the last best benchmark. It's not to say that it was the best, I mean, that it's the optimal benchmark. It may be, there may be some rewards for big budgets and punishment for small budgets relative to each other, even in 86. And I think the Commissioner will be making adjustments or recommendations for adjustments in the 89 budget.
I guess, and perhaps it is covered, but I guess it would be, would sort of increase my comfort level a little if we had, these advisory groups. We have the Road Responsibility Task Force, and we have the Marine Highway Advisory Group. We don't seem to have people looking at the whole budget other than you people, and I assume you will be, but those people are both on two different tracks, and perhaps that's the reason why we've had some of the deliberations this year. Is we've got people looking at the marine highways, and we have people looking at the roads, but not looking at the whole responsibility, and I just wonder why we don't have any way for these groups to work together and look at the entire issue. And I don't have any language that would change what you're trying to do, but I know that I've heard that concern expressed to me by a number of members of the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, the Marine Highway Group really has a different focus, in my view, and I think the letter even reflects it to some extent, than the Road Responsibility Task Force. The Marine Highway Group is a recognition that an advisory group on a long-standing basis probably is advisable to assess a range of things, including service levels, nature of service, and budget questions, and sources of additional revenue. The Road Responsibility Task Force was a proposal from us as an alternative to our initial presentation about road transfers, and an attempt to recognize that it's something that's going to take some review. There's a lot of issues to look at, and it has a more specific focus with a time period at the interim to sit down and look at the question of at least road maintenance responsibility. I think you may be right that there's been a bit of a preoccupation with the road question at the expense of aviation and the overall picture. It is my intent to have the department assess these more general questions and broader questions, and I had envisioned that we might have this road responsibility group also look at that, look at questions like landing fee and tie down for additional sources for aviation revenue. If there was an intent on your part to change it, to broaden it, so that this group, from your point of view, was charged to do that, I guess I probably wouldn't be concerned. The one problem I have is the road maintenance area is a large part of our budget, and one of the reasons we focused in on it, and one area where the transfer question is particularly pertinent, and the amount of time and money we have is such that if you gave this group too large a task, we may get nothing done. I'm open to having that group look at those things, and I don't feel I need intent language to make it part of that discussion, and the DOT will be helping to structure that group and give them suggestions on what they ought to look at, and they may want to look at it on their own anyways, and that would not be a problem for me.
Any further questions? Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 156? Representative Pershaw.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we report out HB 156 with the adopted amendments into a new finance CS, along with the fiscal notes, including the updated DOT fiscal note by the finance chair and the accompanying letter of intent with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Objection? Representative Davis.
No, just state that, object, just to say that I think that the commissioner is certainly is open to, and I'm sure we'll be looking at all these other areas besides these two areas that have been specified in this letter of intent, and that satisfies my concerns, and for that reason I will remove my objection.
Thank you, Representative Davis. This particular bill is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and with the accompanying fiscal notes, that's plural. The next bill we'll take up is House Bill number 196. You have before you committee substitute for House Bill 196, Transportation, an act related to employment enforcement of compliance and financial responsibilities and certification of compliance requirements for air carriers, penalties, issuance of display of certifications on the compliance and definition of aircraft, and providing for an effective date. We had this up yesterday. This was held over for you, Representative Davis.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is in the subcommittee of one, and I took a very careful look at this piece of legislation, and there's just one area that I thought that perhaps we should make some changes, and that's on page 2, line 14. There's a provision in there for the annual fee, and on line 14 that says the department shall prorate a fee for the certificate of compliance issued after the beginning of the calendar year, and I just felt that probably administratively would be a rather difficult one to administer. We don't do that for hardly any other fee, so it would be my recommendation that we delete that second sentence on that underline there.
Yes.
Representative Lyson.
Yeah. How would that affect someone who said bought their license, say, on December the 1st and had it for only 1 month? Would they still pay the full fee then for the balance of the year or for that 1 month? Or
my understanding is that when they buy the license, they pay for, that is, for the calendar of that calendar year. That's correct. So if they purchase the license in the middle of the year, they would still pay for that calendar year. Otherwise, administratively, they're going to have to compute every time somebody pays for the fee how much it's going to cost. So if it's maybe $37.50 or $22.50, depending on which month they purchase it. And I think administratively that would be rather difficult.
Costs aren't that great. Thank you.
I'd like to hear the department's response on that. We're looking at lines 14 is the elimination of one sentence there. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, I'm Becky Barron. I'm legislative liaison for the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. As a whole, the department supports this bill, but we do agree with Representative Davis that lines 14 through 15 should be removed. Through the chair to Representative Larson, in relation to your question, actually the major push that we have in terms of registration of aircraft tends to be for the tourist season. And so actually the big push is there in April, May, June, July. Very rarely do we even get registrations during the month of December.
Yes, Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since there's someone from the Department of Commerce here, I was wondering if, I don't know if you heard about the questions I had yesterday, but it was on the stop use order, and I just wanted to know what administrative protections there are before you put someone out of business. I mean, what's to prevent a mistaken stop use order from being issued?
Through the chair, stop use orders still have the right to go through the court. It's not as strong a stricture as a citation. It's like a cease and desist, and that's perfectly appealable through the courts. Basically, though, you have a situation in which the person either is registered or they're not registered, and you have two checks and balances on that. One, does the department have a record of their registration? Two, do they have a permit? You have a situation where they don't have a permit, and the department doesn't have a record. Generally, you're pretty sure that they really don't have a permit.
And if I can, so when you say it's about as strong as a cease and desist, do they have to stop while they're appealing?
No.
Thank you.
Yes. Is there any further questions?
Yeah.
Representative Frank.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Becky, the answer you just gave to Representative Reed, you're saying that if they were issued a stop use order, they could continue to fly while they were appealing?
While they're appealing, yes.
Okay. Then on the overall feel of the department, does the department have a feel for what percentage of the people or the operators are not complying with the insurance provisions?
I can't personally answer that. I could get that information back to you from our area of measurement standards, but that was not a piece of information they briefed me on.
Okay, because, Mr. Chairman, it seems that the whole purpose of the bill is to strengthen the penalty provisions and thereby increasing the compliance and that sort of thing. And I guess it's always a matter of, you know, how effective the penalty provisions are and how correct or appropriate the penalties and the limits themselves. And I don't know. It's a question that's not easy to answer, how you're going to get people to comply. But yeah, that would that'd be nice to get that information before I went on the floor with it.
Yeah, the only information I have is in relation to how many are in compliance, but I don't have a general feel for how many total aircraft there are.
Does FAA keeps records?
I'm sure we can get it. I just did not come prepared today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You'll get that information.
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Any further questions? Davis, the chair is ready to entertain your motion there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that we delete line 14, beginning with the department and ending with calendar year on line 16.
Is there any objection to that amendment? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Davis?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to point out to the members of the committee that on page 3, There was civil penalties, and in addition to the civil penalties, there is criminal penalties that are being included in this legislation, just for your edification. But I'd move that we move out House Bill 196, transportation amended with individual recommendations.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. That takes care of that particular bill. Yesterday we also has HCR 19. This particular bill was held over from 19. Is there any further debate before I go on to an amendment that was submitted by Representative Frank? Frank, that's in your particular packet.
Everybody have it? I've got more copies.
Is there anybody else would like to speak on House Concurrent Resolution number 19 before I go on to amendments? Representative Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
There's objection. Would you explain your amendment, please?
Yeah, the amendment was suggested by Representative Davis to require the administration to bring back before the legislature appropriate legislation that would will be required under the SBS changes that would also include this dependent care benefit.
Is there any debate on the amendment? Is the objection still maintained?
I remove the objection.
Objection has been removed. Amendment number one has been adopted. Is there further discussion on this particular bill? What's the pleasure of the group?
Yes.
I move that we pass House Concurrent Resolution 19 amended from this committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The next bill we'll take up is House Bill 177. You have before you committee substitute for House Bill 177, Judiciary, an act relating to second injury and providing for an effective date. This particular bill would allow the administrative cost of the second injury fund to be paid out of the fund instead of out of the general fund. This was a situation before 1983. The bill saves us approximately $123,300 in general funds. If there's any questions, we do have Jackie McLaughlin of Department of Labor to answer any of those. Is there any questions on this bill? Representative Davis, Jackie. Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Jackie McClintock, Director of the Workers' Compensation Division.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess the question I have is how are we doing on the second injury fund?
I have a chart here that I should have probably made copies, Mr. Chairman. I'll just state here for the record. Oh, okay, fine. The charts will show a very sharp increase in the balance of the fund. In 1985, we had over $1 million unencumbered in the fund, and over $3 million in 1986. Receipts for this past year are up over $4 million for this past year. So the fund, because of the legislature's actions, actually it was 1981, for the sliding scale type of contribution that the employer makes into the second injury fund, the fund is doing very well. It's gone, for the contribution for the employer, it has gone from 6% to 5% in 1986. 1987 claims the contribution is 0% for that year. So the balance of the fund has been doing very well.
Are you done, Representative Davis?
Yeah, I was just looking here. This is the second bill in a row, I guess, but when we don't have a position paper by the department, I assume you support the legislation, though.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, there is a position paper on HB 177.
It's not in our packet.
It's to go to
right.
Bill.
But I assume
I'll get one copy. Absolutely, yes. In fact, it's the... the government's bill. Yeah, we support it.
Thank you.
Representative Frank?
Yeah, thank you. Could you give us a brief description of the fund and how it relates to the main fund there?
Yes, how it relates to... There's only one fund. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. There's only one fund in the Workers' Compensation Division, and that is the second injury fund. It's a fund that is financed by contributions by employers on compensation that's paid to injured workers. The purpose of the fund is to reimburse employers if they have hired or retained in employment a person with a pre-existing disability. And if that second injury combines with that pre-existing disability, making their disability greater, then the fund pays all the compensation over 104 weeks of the first compensation.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions?
Chair.
Yes, Representative Rieger.
I'm sorry, maybe explain this, but I missed it. I'm looking at the very first sentence of this bill, and I was wondering if you could explain what that says. I mean, what that really means. I'm looking at lines 10 through 14.
Uh-huh. Let me ask a question. Are we on the committee substitute or the original bill?
Yes.
Okay. All right. The section under C?
Right.
All right. Okay. Yes, that's the tough part. this amendment came on in the Judiciary Committee. And basically what it does is right an inconsistency that's presently in our law. And that is for employees who leave beneficiaries who are dependent on them and versus employees who leave beneficiaries who are not dependent. Okay, under all workers' compensation laws, there is a right of action against a third party. In case that third party, say a manufacturer of a piece of equipment that has caused the injury or death of an employee, for the employee or the beneficiaries to go against that third party to recover damages. Also, the employer recovers any kind of compensation that's paid to that beneficiary or to that employee. The difference between the dependent beneficiaries and the non-dependent is that dependent beneficiaries have 1 year past the time that an award of compensation is made to them to sue that third party. If the beneficiary is not dependent, and the employer is paid $10,000 into the second injury fund, which they are required to do under subsection 040, then they have lost their right, the beneficiaries, non-dependent beneficiaries, to sue that third party. And we had a recent case where this came up, and actually we can't think of any good reason why that is that way today. I think most statutes have been changed in other states. The only thing that we can think of is that before the wrongful death statutes that have come on the books and the cases is that the people who were entitled to compensation as beneficiaries, dependents, would have probably been the same people that were entitled to benefits before or to a lawsuit for recovery of damages prior to wrongful death statutes on the books. So I think it's just a matter of that the law has not been changed. Can I give you an example maybe to make it clear?
Yeah,
would that help?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I know. It's really a lot simpler than what it sounds, but I guess I can use myself as a better example and perhaps Chairman Adams.
Oh, I don't know. Let's use Chairman.
If we were both on an airplane in our conducting business for the state, and that the plane that we were riding on went down, and the reason for the plane going down was a malfunction of a part or a piece of equipment, the beneficiaries of Representative Adams would be covered under workers' compensation. Also, the beneficiaries would be able to sue that third party to recover damages past 1 year. Okay. Now, as on the other hand, I don't have any dependents. So my family, my mother, my sister, my brother, whatever, since they are not dependent, would not be able to sue that third party for a wrongful death action because they are not dependent on me for their livelihood. When or after the date the employer paid the $10,000, again, as they're required to do under 040 of the Act.
Okay.
Does that clarify?
I think so, but this creates the situation you just described, or this eliminates the situation you just described?
This eliminates the situation so that my beneficiaries would have the right to pursue a third-party claim against the manufacturer, say, of that equipment. Also, what happens is that the employer would get their $10,000 back and would also get any kind of attendant funeral costs.
Okay. So the effect of this first sentence, if I can paraphrase it, is to let people who are not dependents sue for you're wrongful death.
That
is correct. Sue the manufacturer or whoever.
That is correct.
And is that just a policy thing? I mean, I was just wondering if that's a thing that should be done.
All right. Mr. Chairman, we can't think of any good reason why that we should separate two classes of people, of saying beneficiaries that have dependents have a right to sue, and beneficiaries that are not dependent have no right to sue against a third party. And again, you know, our interest...